Hello, everybody. Today is the 15th, I guess, of May 2014. We've just had our WAYSAC festival all over the world, and I've not done anything the day before except prepare for that. So now I'm back again, and we are in program number 18. We are preparing the understanding of various references so that we can gather them all together as we move petal by petal for a more synthetic understanding of the tiers and petals of the egoic lotus. So now we are dealing with initiations and the rays governing initiations and the results of the various initiations. We have, of course, mentioned this as we go along, but I'm now going to look at the two references which are very valuable in that respect. Beginning with a little background around page 339 of the rays and initiations. I think, more like 339. And then going later into the book. As esoteric astrologers know well, there comes a life cycle wherein the disciple reverses himself upon the wheel of life, the zodiacal wheel, and from going clockwise around the zodiac, now begins to go anti-clockwise. Now, we have to look at that word disciple because that may give us a hint about when the reversal is occurring. And we see that petals 1, 2, and 3 are traveling in a way clockwise, petals 4, 5, and 6 clockwise. But if we look to start the sacrifice knowledge petal in relation to the third subplane of the higher mental plane, then, and to keep each petal touching that subplane to which it is particularly related, the aspect to which it is particularly related, then we're going to have the beginning of a counterclockwise motion. Whether this is literally the case, we have further to investigate. We do know there comes a time when all nine of the ordinary petals turn in a manner different from those that the petals of synthesis turn. We're not told what the direction is, however. We might think, perhaps, that the petals of the first nine petals would turn in the clockwise manner and the petals of synthesis counterclockwise, but certainly the wheel is already being reversed by the time we are working in petals number 7, 8, and 9. So I guess it also depends upon what we mean by the reversal of the wheel. Is it that first tendency to move in the direction of the higher of the pairs of opposites that we find in petal number 5, or is it something that occurs still later after we have won the battle in the desert with the devil, so to speak, the world, the flesh, and the devil, and then find ourselves moving definitely onto the Syrian regime of initiation without any possibility of going backwards. That has also to be established. There are different points of view on that matter. But certainly some sort of reversal, some sort of moving in a new direction does occur in relation to petal 5, when the solar angel begins to look in and become a downward-looking, a downward-gazing soul and begins to deliberately superintend the evolution of the man, where it had been left to other processes, mostly before, including the developmental work of the second logos. Okay. So, further, he learns that the substance aspect of his nature may still be conditioned by forces flowing through them sequentially and serially, and according to his horoscope and according to the exoteric mode of zodiacal revolution. So, in a way, one part of our nature, or one energy flow within our energy system, is moving in the direction of matter form, hence the clockwise direction. It's kind of interesting when you think about the swastika, you know, if the swastika were to turn in the in a clockwise direction, we might consider this, okay, a symbol not of evil. Were it to turn from the left to the right in the counterclockwise motion, we would remember what the Germans, the Nazis, had done with it, and we would consider it a symbol of evil. And yet, it is the counterclockwise direction of the zodiac which symbolizes moving forward on the true path of spirituality and not, as it were, backwards into matter form. So there are some perspectives that have to be worked out there. At the same time, the disciple is receiving energy currents from the reversed wheel whereon he, as a soul, finds himself. And these currents are moving in his energy system in a different manner and are emphasizing the centers above the diaphragm and their activity rather than feeding the centers below the diaphragm. He is consequently the recipient of two currents of energy going in reverse directions, and hence the increased conflict in his life and circumstances, and these constitute the reason for the test of initiation. Well, St. Paul well knew that, and he knew that there was an aspect of his nature, maybe some Christians call it original sin, that was moving against his higher intentions. In other words, simply moving as it is always moved. It is the disciple, it is the monad in incarnation, awakening to himself, who has reversed the direction of his striving and is therefore moving against all that had been natural, all that had been clockwise in his nature in terms of the zodiac, all that had been instinctual for millions of years. He starts to go against that. And that is the result of the rending process. So when we think of a person working in the fifth petal and so-called fighting it out in that petal, because it's a scorpionic petal as well as a Leonian petal, then we understand the reason for the conflict, because from that time on, the higher of the pairs of opposites is really coming more clearly into view. And one wants to, as it were, swim in that direction rather than just go with the flow, which in this case is clockwise and is problematic because it stimulates the vitality of matter form rather than and of the lower of the pairs of opposites, which is the personality, the 18 lower subplanes, rather than developing the higher soul powers within the individual. Okay, I included this because I thought it was so interesting. I don't know how immediately relevant it is to our task, but this on a tiny scale is true of the centers in the etheric body of the disciple. Okay, now, what is true? The contest between currents. They too emphasize the same dual activity once the path of discipleship is trodden and the path of initiation is entered. Because there has not been a complete conquest of matter form. The zodiacal wheel is essentially a cosmic center. Now I want to come to something very interesting, which I think you will think is most interesting. I often quote it, but every once in a while I do run into the reference, and should not be suffering from the loss of the page number. The zodiacal wheel is essentially a cosmic wheel. It is a 12-petaled lotus. But it is the 12-petaled lotus within the 1,000-petaled lotus, i.e. the highest head center, of an unknown cosmic entity, the one referred to in my earlier books as the one about whom naught may be said. That is such a such an important reference, and basically we're understanding that this lotus structure is operative cosmically as well, and who knows, it could go on and actually be universal. Now I want to bring in these as well and just make sure that we can call upon them when we need to do so. I want to say, in trying to locate the one about whom naught may be said, I believe it will be found as this triangle here that is colored green in the fourth of the sub-parabrahmic lotuses. And I believe that in this little green triangle will be found that great unknown cosmic deity, with such constellations as the Great Bear and our constellation, and also the Little Bear and Orion, and maybe the Pleiades aspects of them, and maybe the Southern Cross, and let's see, maybe the Centaur, maybe our own cosmic logos, all those as chakras within its nature. Now, I don't know whether my interpretation of this chart is correct. I know there are very many interpretations, but so far I have located our local one about whom naught may be said, and you can see that there are 49 others, more or less on the same level, in that third triangle. This chart was colored by Keith Bailey for AUM. It is, I think he's done this correctly here. This, to me, looks like the third, of the triangles, and there's so much association of the Pleiades with the color green and the third ray. It has other associations as well, as with cosmic Buddhi and then with the second ray. The multiplicity of zodiacal influences have eventually a dual effect. One upon Shambhala, the planetary head center, gathered there, I would say, under what we call the law of assembly, where you know, all the forces needed for the planet are gathered into that great center, and the other upon Hierarchy, the planetary heart center. The planetary heart center. Now, if it just struck me, if Shambhala is the planetary head center, there has to be a heart in the head within Shambhala. But of course, you know, there are many Shambhalas in a sense. Shambhala is Shambhala for our globe. Are there other Shambhalas for other globes? What is the Shambhala for each chain? What is the Shambhala for each a planetary scheme? We don't want to get lost in multiplicity here, but we do want to point out that Shambhala is usually considered to be related to our globe, and yet the concept demands that we elevate it, and if Sanat Kumara is really the Lord of the World in extension, then his home in Shambhala has to have a meaning on the level of the planetary scheme, not just the planetary globe, a planetary globe such as ours. So this final dual activity is registered by the initiate of the highest degrees when he undergoes the eighth and ninth initiation. Not too much is said about those initiations, but let's just say the zodiac is working upon Shambhala as a planetary head center, and upon Hierarchy as a planetary heart center, and something about that dual relation, something that we don't know, is vouchsafe to the initiate of the eighth and ninth degrees. So we move on. You have, therefore, and some of this will be, you know, review for you, but I think it's beautifully, it's beautifully put here. Right. Now I understand this. One of my friends alerted me to this and said, watch out, sex magic is not right. It's sex and magic. This is something we have to consider because obviously all the qualities given here for these initiations are positive. And while there may be a tendency towards sex magic, it is more in relation to sex and magic per se. Well, this is initiation one. It is the birth of the Christ in the heart. Many things are stimulated. The sacral center is one. And DK applies the idea of the seventh ray to the sacral center. The third ray is also there, as it is the home of the mental elemental, and it's much related to Mars as well, which rules sex, and the sixth ray is involved. And generally, the way that sixth ray people get themselves in difficulty is through the abuse of the sex instinct. So there are other rays there as well, but the sacral center is prominent, and a higher form of creativity has to be involved. It rules beginnings. That's Aries, isn't it, in a way? It rules relationship, and that's Libra, and it rules both sex and magic. So we have the coming together of the two poles, and there is the sense of the highest and the lowest meet. Well, at least the bringing together of two poles, heaven and earth, in a sense, and in general, the beginning of the magical approach to divinity. When we look at the petals that would be involved, the first initiation, well, the seventh petal, which is a Libran petal, is definitely involved. And there is work in that petal, organization work, while the fifth petal is unfolding. And by the time the fifth petal completely unfolds, we do have the first initiation. That can be found in various obscure references, which I managed to gather, but now the question is, can I regather it at the moment? I'm not going to bother, but it's going to show up at a certain point. So the whole idea of relationship is between soul and personality, and we know that that really occurs in the work of the fifth petal, when the pairs of opposites are coming together. They, at least the vertical pairs of opposites are understood in the fifth petal, and especially in the stage when aspiration begins and one begins to long for that. The probable coming together, the union of the two, is accomplished, I think, more under the impulse of the rod of initiation in the seventh petal. There is where the divine marriage is really at work. And the soul and personality begin the infusion process, which is not consummated, some say, at the third initiation, until the third initiation, but also we could even say the fourth initiation is really the moment of consummation, because there's still more of the soul that the personality has not absorbed or been able to express until the fourth initiation is ready to occur. A higher form of creativity at the throat is required. And interestingly, that at the first initiation, DK tells us elsewhere that the throat center begins to be ruled, at least in part, by the seventh ray. It is normally ruled for the disciple, even the probationer, I suppose, by Saturn and the third ray, and for average non-aspiring people, by Earth and the third ray. But in comes Uranus at the sacral center, and it also takes its place at the throat center at this time. So a kind of creativity which is more in line with the streams of energy sent forth by the solar angel is what is desired. A kind of creativity which will be creativity in line with the good, the true, and the beautiful, creativity in line with the plan. Then comes the initiation we call the baptism in the River Jordan. This is the cleansing and control of the astral body, and it's connected with the solar plexus center. Obviously, again, we're in the love petals here when this is occurring, and there's work on the sixth of the petals, which correlates with the sign Virgo, which also the sixth correlates with the solar plexus center, as the solar plexus is ruled by the number six, even though in another sense it is the fifth petal, counting from above to below. Yet counting from below to above, it's the third petal, which is half of six. And DK has told us how the third and the sixth rays are intimately related. So there will be work in this sixth petal. It will be on the verge of unfolding as the initiation is taken. And definite work in the eighth petal, which again, interestingly, is ruled by Mars from the scorpionic point of view. It is a petal of great relinquishment and sacrifice, of giving up with no thought of gaining for that which has been offered in sacrifice. So it fits with the Scorpio ideal of losing one's life to find it. It gives us, you know, DK elaborates upon this later, and when I go through this book, I hope to go through it as a video book. I've already done the first half or part of the book in a detailed kind of written commentary. Now I'm choosing to work in this way, so the second half of the book will be done in this, hopefully, in the verbal manner, audio. And this gives us dedication, which DK tells us inevitably arouses glamour, which is actually dissipated by a higher form of devotion. I think it's really important for us to realize that devotion is not a form of glamour. The glamour so often occurs in the same field in which devotion is exercised, and there can be false devotions and so forth. But the soul, solar angel, has a tremendous devotion to its projection, the personality, and the monad came into incarnation for the very purpose of devotion. He's called a lord of ceaseless and persevering devotion. And that is not the same as the glamour of devotion. So here we are then working in the on the unfoldment of the sixth petal, which has, of course, like all the petals of love, it has the rose color of devotion. And working also in the eighth petal, which, interestingly enough, has also the, it carries with it as well, the rose color, because it's just carried along as one of the ongoing qualities. So when the rod of initiation directs its energy to the eighth petal, the work of the sixth petal can be considered complete, and the man will be in the position to do many things. One of them might be to consciously return to incarnation without having to dissolve the mental and emotional vehicles, which certainly would save time. Some kind of continuity of consciousness will be found there when the person is occultly trained. There will also be, interestingly, the ability to give up one's body to a higher initiate if that higher initiate needs to use it. So this requires a great control of the astral vehicle. All right, so I'm going over these lightly. There is definitely a purification operating here. And as we know, the planets are Neptune, Ray 6, Venus, Ray 5, but with much Ray 6 in it, and Jupiter, Ray 2, with some suspected Ray 6 in it on some level for its bounding enthusiasm. So the solar plexus is stimulated, and now we are ready to exit and work within the unfolding process of the sacrifice petals. The work is then done at the second degree within the love petals. There are many correlations here, but I think you get the main correlations. Okay. Let's see. There we go. Right now we're in this list of initiations. Obviously, the causal body does disappear long before the list has been exhausted. So we'll just take that in mind and maybe only deal briefly with the remaining initiations. There's a lot to say, but our subject is the egoic lotus, so we'll try to stick to that. This is the initiation of transfiguration, and it's very obvious that when he tells us that all nine petals are unfolded, that the Ajna Center has to have a great deal to do with the work of the ninth petal, which is, in a certain sense, a Sagittarian petal. From another sense, I call it an Aries petal, an Arician petal. The Ajna Center is a center in the head, and the possibility of divine vision or of seership is entering here at the Ajna Center, and Sagittarius is also a sign of seership. And by the time we're reaching the transfiguration, the higher type of psychism can begin to occur. The fifth ray will always be needed here because we're entering the luminous domain of the soul on its own plane, and we're able now to see through higher psychism, increasingly through soul sight. The great problem, of course, is that people think that lower psychism is higher psychism, and when their mind has learned about higher psychism, but their mechanism still tends to engage in lower psychism, there can be a lot of confusion, attributing what should be understood by higher psychism to what is actually seen through lower psychism. Well, it's a transition phase. The keynote here, keynotes are integration, integration of the personality with the soul. This has been going on ever since the first initiation, and maybe even earlier. But the phases of integration are several, and they are fairly well consummated by the time we reach the third initiation. The integration of the energy system of the soul with that of the personality, but not, as I say, entirely. Interestingly enough, the word integration corresponds so much with the number four. There's something about this fusing and blending and harmonizing power of the number four, which is equivalent to integration. And the wholeness of the fourth sign, Cancer, its ability to see wholes, is very much related to the integration process. So let us say that, pretty much 75% of the integration has occurred by this time. And interestingly, Sagittarius at this ninth petal is a sign of direction. And the direction is toward the plan and towards the expression of that plan as it serves the purpose. And we are leaving the mystical stage behind and attempting to know something of the science of the kingdom of the soul. We're not just talking about science in the usual materialistic sense, which can even be undertaken when there's engagement with the third petal. We're talking about the science of spirituality. And that is, it is a Uranian factor rather than a strictly Neptunian factor. So this transfiguration, as we have probably discussed before, occurs when the ninth petal is completely unfolded, and there's quite a bit of unfoldment of the synthesis petals as well. Let's see if there's anything else to say about that. Well, I think, you know, that is sufficient. All the petals are unfolded. These are Mercury petals, these petals of sacrifice, and Mercury, strange as it seems, with its color yellow, is deeply connected with the whole process of sacrifice. You know, if I were to think about that, what that means, a part of Mercury remains above while a part of Mercury descends below. It's a bit like the monad in that respect. Part stays at home and part goes forth as the monad in extension. So the law of sacrifice is ruled by the fourth ray. Mercury is the distributor of the fourth ray at this time. It might not need to send a part of itself into the lower worlds, but it does. Having pervaded the entire universe with a fragment of myself, I remain. The solar angels have a particular place or focus on the Buddhic plane. The Buddhic plane is ruled in one respect by Mercury. And there they do the same thing. They stay at home, and yet they send an aspect of themselves forth into the lower worlds, the mental plane especially, and they have connections with the permanent atoms and so forth. But all the permanent atoms anyway are inside the egoic lotus, which is basically the structure which the solar angel underlies. So let's just say that Mercury is also closely related with the solar angel's work, the law of magnetic control, the fourth systemic law, the staying at home while sending oneself forth into the lower world sacrificially. That's a very mercurial thing to do, and that's what the solar angel does. And all those sacrifice petals, well, you know, yellow is their predominating color. Yellow is found in each of the sacrifice petals. You might expect that there would be a double yellow in the nine and not the blue, but the blue is somehow substituted for the yellow. There is a double rose in the five, showing what an important petal it is for the transition into the love aspect rather than continued preoccupation with the intelligent aspect. But we don't seem maybe to have earned the double yellow yet, I'm not sure. The blue, which is not really the complementary color of yellow, violet is really, is found in place of the double yellow in petal number nine. So we'll work out the meaning of that as we go along. Then comes initiation four. It is called renunciation, the great renunciation, sometimes called the crucifixion and so forth. By the time that is taking place, there is the egoic lotus is under threat from within and without. The monad contributes to its dissolution. The triad contributes. The three members of the atomic triangle contribute. There may be other contributions to the dissolution of this treasure house of development, which may have been with the incarnating monad for maybe, you know, 25 million years. I mean, that's just a very rounded off figure that I've come up with, because it is related to the fourth ray. At least there's good reason to think so, and the rheologist, esoteric astrologer Stephen Pugh, seems to think that it is related to the fourth ray, and he comes up with good reasons why it should be so. So I've kind of looked at where most people are today after 21 million years and kind of estimated how long it might take them to complete their unfoldment of the egoic lotus, and another 4 million years or so seems about right to me. So I've offered this idea of 25 million years as a period of unfoldment. But then it's hard to calculate, because if you go back to the moon chain, where individualization took place in a different manner, and even to the previous solar system, which, you know, how long ago was that? If solar systems last, according to the Hindu chronology, the Brahmanical chronology, some 300 and how many trillions of years? Is it 340? Well, you know, there's no place, no, 311, that was it. On my way there, I realized what it was. 311 trillion years, 40 billion. That had to have been a long time ago. And for some of us, individualization did occur then. So, and individualization means there will be an egoic lotus, or at least if there are means of individualization without that particular petal structure, flower structure, well, we haven't been told about it. But we've been told that there are different methods of achieving that petal structure. So anyway, the heart center is the focus, and it just keeps on ascending, you know. Seventh ray for the first initiation, sixth ray for the second, fifth ray for the third, fourth ray for the fourth. There's an exact correspondence, and it doesn't really continue that way, interestingly enough. But we'll get to that. Well, crucifixion of the form, really the form can no longer seek for itself. The elemental nature can no longer fulfill its desires. The hands cannot grab for the elemental nature. The feet cannot go on errands to acquire what the elemental nature wants, and all of the faculties of the mind, well, they can no longer. It's really more like a ta, but even the head is kept in place and can go nowhere. So one cannot even think in terms of satisfying the elemental nature. And there's a great sacrifice involved here. The fourth ray, the color yellow, is involved because it does fit one to move to the Buddhic plane, whose color is yellow, at least in terms of man. So the color yellow is fitting, and eventually there is harmony achieved after much pain and sacrifice, and that harmony will be with the will that one has within one's monadic triadal nature. Harmony at last with the intention. It's not really harmony in the lower worlds. The lower worlds are no more a concern. One serves in those lower worlds, and one seeks to create harmony, but because there is harmony between oneself and the divine purpose and plan, then that is the type of harmony that is meant. Well, here, you know, in a way, we can go no further, because this is where the egoic lotus does disappear by one of seven methods. I've talked about those methods, you know. Basically, it's a fiery disappearance, but in a more specific sense, it is shattering ray 1, inclusion ray 2, accumulation ray 3, harmonization ray 4, perforation ray 5, that's my own word for it, immolation ray 6, and magical incantation ray 7. So just go to the beginning of Letters on Occult Meditation, right there around page 15, 16, 17, 18, and you will find the methods by which the causal body is destroyed. So once it's destroyed, you know, obviously there's no more egoic lotus. The faculties stored in the atomic triangles are raised to the three higher permanent atoms, and so are all of the abilities that are found in the treasury. They are raised up into the triad, so that in a way, you know, nothing is lost. It's only translated into a higher vehicle from which it can be recalled at will. I'm remembering the Tibetan. He said, "I am remembering my brother being in love." He was talking to a Libran disciple. And he said, then he called it the greatest of all glamours. But, you know, he was remembering the time when it had occurred to him. But he was a master. And so, therefore, he's remembering from the triad, is he not? He's not remembering from the lower permanent atoms, because he doesn't have those anymore. He just is remembering from the content of those atoms, which has been transposed, translated, trans-whatever, lifted to the higher permanent atoms, and still available on demand, if one wishes. It's not that one necessarily has to forget all that one has done as one goes on. Of course, it can fall below the threshold of consciousness, just the way so much of what we have done in life, in many cycles, is well below the threshold of consciousness. It's not something we deal with fortunately, but it can be retrieved, and incidentally, is under our own particular Bodhi tree, whatever that experience will mean to us, is retrieved. So the day will come of the bringing everything into the light and seeing what has led us to this position of liberation, the path we have taken. And I'm sure it's going to be one of those experiences where you kind of like hold your head, if you have a head, and say, oh, did I do that? You know, I always had, when I was a child, just 3 or 4 years old, I always had this dream of seeing movies of my life or something like that. You know, it's as if I could see other things and I was going to watch it all in a movie. And I saw things even at that age when I said, oh, you know. So, but one day we'll have the detachment, the scientific interest to observe all that as if it was really happening to, in a way, someone else, to a personality, and we'll be sufficiently detached to learn from it instead of reacting to it. Well, okay, you know, I dearly love all of this stuff that's coming up, but I think it's not on our subject. You know, I would love to speak about it and talk about the planetary correlations and the zodiacal correlations and all that, but rather just to keep myself from spinning out of control here and doing my usual tangential thing, I will draw a red line. And rather than speak of these things at this point, I will speak of them because it is my intention to do the second half of this marvelous book, Raised and Initiations, in the video book form, and then it will be inevitable that these have to be spoken of in some clear manner. But, you know, with all of this, 6 and 7, even 5, we're way beyond the egoic lotus, and really it's sort of the discussion of initiation and the triad, initiation and the monad. You know, from the time we've taken the sixth initiation, we're pretty well a monad. Now, you know, there are other vehicles. There seems to be a vehicle on the higher atmic plane, maybe on the third level of it. Is it flower-like? I don't know, but it has to be destroyed before further progress is possible. And then there's the monadic vehicle itself, the temple of Ezekiel. Now, that also has to be destroyed. Is it 12-fold? There's a lot of hints that talk about the 12-fold monad, the higher 12, as it's called. Are there petals there as well, and does it have its own kind of higher counterpart to the thing we're talking about here? Well, if it does, it's way beyond our ken at the moment. Would be most interesting, of course. And something has to bring about that destruction so that the monad can go free, you know, at the, when would that occur, you know? When would that occur? Would it occur, is it the homecoming of the jiva that has gone forth? Is that when the destruction occurs? Or is it more likely preceding the seventh initiation when the volatile essence, which is in a way pure being, is released into the sea of fire? Maybe that's when it occurs. But, you know, we'll live and learn and we'll see as we go on. So I won't get into initiation number 8. Oh, it's so fascinating. But we'll deal with those things when we actually are working in the later part of the book. And initiation number 9, refusal. I think one of the interesting things with all these initiations, later ones, is when is one liberated onto the cosmic astral plane? It begins to seem, I mean, certainly the Christ is responding to the cosmic astral plane and has had some sort of cosmic touch from that plane. And the question is, can the Christ focus on the cosmic astral plane? It also seems the Buddha can focus on the cosmic astral plane. There's something about that sign Taurus in connection with desire and even cosmic desire. But although they can focus there, perhaps, I mean, certainly respond to those energies. And although they can perhaps journey there, I mean, it seems certainly possible, given that a 6th degree normal initiate can begin a cosmic path, which the lowest of which occurs on the cosmic astral plane. So why not the great teachers? But then it's not until this 9th initiation that they, in a way, are focused entirely on that plane or increasingly beyond, and refuse contact with the cosmic physical plane. It would almost be like, when we give up our need for incarnation and maybe take some of these astral incarnations or mental incarnations, but never again on the etheric physical plane. So we will not deal with those, but instead we'll go on similarly to what is called the accomplishments of initiation. At least I call it that. And this is found on page 684 and following of the same book, The Rays and the Initiations. And there's another one of these long, wonderful lists, which probably we can only take up to the 4th level, even though it's so important to discuss what goes beyond. Takes it all the way to the refusal. No, but we can't really do that. Well, not only are we not equipped to do that, but it's not on the subject. So, with the attempt to stay on the subject, then we will limit ourselves. So anyway, accomplishments of initiation. I have pointed out continuously that initiation is not really, I love how he describes it here, the curious mixture of self-satisfied attainment, ceremonial, and hierarchical recognition as portrayed by the major occult groups. As a matter of fact, ceremonial, I believe, is not even used beyond the 2nd initiation. Other factors are used. But then ceremonial probably has its own higher turn of the spiral. And the daily ritual of Sanat Kumara is a kind of ceremonial in itself, and it's occurring on levels much higher than can be appreciated by the normal 2nd degree initiate. And there's the smugness of it, and the whole idea of being better than someone else because you've taken an initiation that they haven't taken. It almost denies the attainment to say such things, because there's such an emphasis of ahamkara and such a violation of the law of love. It's almost as if climbing higher, one is more and more obliged to serve in love below. And DK says we should substitute for criticism and, putting others down, the loving recognition of limitation, the loving recognition of limitation. That would be quite a difference, rather than the usual sort of stratifying of oneself along some kind of ladder and taking pleasure in one's position. Anyway, I'm an initiate. Okay, now, self-satisfied attainment, ceremonial, and of course that great need for recognition that is so much a part of many people's psyche. If the hierarchy recognizes me, then I must be someone, right? Well, that's a long way from what one really is. The true boundary-breaking, boundary-pervading, extending identifications are what one truly is, and not this limited unit that seems to ascend by degrees and lord it over others who have not. Anyway, the occult groups are the most glamored of all the groups, says Master DK. So let's think about that when we think about our worth to the world. It is far, and this is what people don't want to hear, you know, it is far more a process of excessively hard work during which the initiate becomes what he is, meaning that in form he's able to bring through that which on the higher planes he already is. The initiate is the monad. And eventually and gradually over much work with resistant material from an earlier solar system, what one is can be manifested through what one has seemed to be. And in that sense, Sanat Kumara walks the earth, or Shambhala comes to the lowest levels and pervades it. So this may entail hierarchical recognition, but not in the form usually pictured. Well, you know, the flattery. Master Morio warns about flattery, and he says, just use flattery and just see how quickly the fruit drops into your hand with no further effort. So the masters or the ones who could recognize are working even harder than the one who seeks or the one who might be recognized. So the recognition comes in terms of responsibilities heightened and spheres of service offered, and not in terms of saying, oh, what a good disciple you are, now you've achieved this initiation or that initiation. Such a distortion, isn't it? So the initiate finds himself in the company of those who have preceded him, and he is not rejected, but is seen and noted, acknowledged, and then put to work. Well, there is the beauty of it all, you know. We're working on the cosmic physical plane, which is a plane ruled essentially by Saturn. The physical permanent atom of the planetary logos, I guess, and maybe it's the solar logos as well, is ruled by Saturn. Saturn, the planet of work, and we have to make the archetype appear through work down here in these conditioned worlds of becoming, ruled essentially by the third ray, which is Saturn's ray. So no time is wasted in having a victory banquet or something. Okay. It is also a graded series, initiation is a graded series of liberations resulting in the attainment of increased freedom from that which lies behind in his experience. The door is closed upon the past experience, and that is found in our frequent references in our rules for disciples and initiates. So this carries with it the permission, soul enjoined or given, to proceed further on the way. The soul, after all, is a great master, the soul or angel is anyway, and the master, or in collaboration with other masters, or collaboration with the master of the particular individual, may decide that further permission can be given. Always, there's a tremendous inner obedience in all of these decisions. Somehow, one is always looking to one's superior and realizing that in what one does, there may be implications upon a system, those implications being seen perhaps fully or sufficiently only by one who is superior to the one making the decision, superior in scope of vision and understanding. So there is always a looking above to see whether permission is granted to go ahead in a particular way. It's not any kind of rampant individualism, I'll do what I please, nothing at all of that nature. So initiation is a graded series of liberations, a graded expansion of rings past not. These liberations allow for the coming in of faculty which before could not be exercised, so one's scope of expression is much greater than heretofore, and then one may proceed upon the way if permission is given. And I'm remembering, you know, even on a lesser scale, that the masters decide upon the ashramic placement of an individual. Shall he remain in a particular ashram for further training? Shall he move on to another ashram which is more in line with his ultimate destiny, but which may be a premature movement at the moment? All of this has to be decided with great wisdom, understanding, compassion, and practicality by the masters. So these freedoms, I love the D's, you know, these freedoms are the result of detachment, dispassion, discrimination. So in a way, detachment from that which is, there's different ways to look at this. It's oftentimes discipline of the physical, dispassion from the emotional, discrimination in relation to the mental. Detachment is the general term, but then decentralization is the word used in relation to the personality as a whole, and then the whole thing is a process of detachment, which characterizes it all the way back to the monad. But detachment can apply to any of the levels. It is the sort of common denominator. It's found on every level. Anyway, these freedoms are the result of detachment, dispassion, and discrimination. At the same time, discipline enforces and makes possible the hard work required to pass the grade. It's, you know, Saturn is such a loving deity in a certain way because that's why he's the god of opportunity. He, in a way, forces you to do the very thing which will, after all, liberate you. You know, you can have a lot of rope and enjoy your Neptunian, Venusian, Neptunian holidays, Neptunian, Venusian, Jupiterian holidays, but in the last analysis, will it have given you what you need to actually pass the grade? Well, you know, Saturn just forces the nose, shoulder to the wheel, nose to the grindstone, and all of that, and makes you do those things which actually work for progress. So then you stand back and you look at how hard it's been and you say, thank goodness it's been so hard. And that is a gratitude that really is going to Saturn. All these four techniques, for that is what they are preceded by a series of disillusionments which, when realized and comprehended, leave the aspirant no choice but to move forward into greater light. And, you know, it's not that we choose dispassion readily until we are disappointed with what has happened on the plane of passion. Or, you know, that we choose discrimination until we understand that our mental formulations have led nowhere. And thus it is with the physical disciplines, you know, the elemental nature running wild. Well, it leads nowhere and just to exhaustion. So then we say, okay, discipline. And thus with the general detaching process. All of this obviously becoming more evident to the person as they move into the petals of love, and still more evident as they move into the petals of sacrifice, where abnormal, strenuous effort is required in addition to the application of the rod of initiation to make further progress. So it's not that we, you know, choose the hard way just because we're inclined to. We look at what the broad and easy way has given us, not so much, and that within us wants more. So I like this. Preceded by a series of disillusionments, and, you know, sometimes people say, oh, I'm so disillusioned, and they don't realize what a gift it is. Now, of course, to remain in a state of disillusionment, you know, followed by self-pity and sort of a circular consideration of all the things you've lost, well, that's not what disillusionment is meant to give. The gifts of disillusionment, you know, lightening up on the illusions, are to apply some technique which will lead you out of those illusions, lead you out of those thought forms and ways of desiring and of acting that have really led nowhere. All right. Let's see what else. I would like to have you study initiation from the angle of liberation. It's not a pat on the back. It is Uranian liberation, which releases to the into the hands of the soul-infused personality more of the powers, virtues, capacities of the soul, triad, and monad, looking upon it as a process of strenuously attained freedoms. Now, when I look at that, I say, well, there's a real combination of Saturn and Uranus, right? The freedoms are Uranian, and the strenuous application is Saturnian. And I think that anybody who has really emerged into a state of greater freedom, even if it's the physical freedom of an athlete, I've seen some figure skaters do some things which don't look like a human being could do them. But one can only realize how much hard work is demanded in preparing to do such things. And then one flies, you know. So strenuously attained freedoms. We have to really be willing to work for each step forward. And in that work, we actually do serve the lesser lives which we have incarnated to serve anyway. So the working out of our freedom is a service to the lives which have bound us hitherto. Now that may be an interesting consideration. This basic aspect of initiation, when realized by the initiate, ties his experience into a firm relation with that of the whole humanity, whose fundamental struggle is the attainment of freedom. I guess we're all working on that, the freedom whereby the soul and its powers can unfold and all men be free because of an individually attained freedom, not just because they've been artificially let out of prison. They wouldn't have the capacity. They have to work up the capacity. When they are attaining their freedom, they are building their abilities. They are building receptacles for their higher abilities so those higher abilities can flow in and be expressed. So unless we've struggled for freedom and really earned it, the benefits of freedom can rarely be expressed. It's like, you know, giving an uneducated, undisciplined person and say, well, here's $100 million. Do with it what you will. Well, what's going to happen under such circumstances when the power that should be earned is simply bestowed without any responsibility on the part of the recipient or even capacity? We all know where it leads, and power given to the unready results so often in disaster and their retardation, and is of no value to the whole. So even though we struggle inch by inch, and it seems that we are held down, there's a great wisdom in this apparent Saturnian oppression, which makes us earn our capacities. And then we are more likely to use them with wisdom. Well, anyway, let's see what we have here. Now, we're going to study the nine initiations. Well, we won't study the nine now. I'm tempted, of course, you know. They are so fantastic and so interesting, but it's another subject, really. So if you will study the nine initiations and look upon them from this angle, how do you call it, strenuously attained freedom. So let's just mark that in to emphasize it in our mind. Strenuously attained freedoms. You will see how each does most definitely mark a point of attainment. It's a step up the ladder, and it's a step through the unfolding, gradually unfolding petals, the unfoldment of each higher petal indicating a point of attainment and a point by means of which a point reached where higher capacities can be exercised. Remember that the petals are not just passive accumulators of faculty worked up from below. There are bestowed upon them are streams of energy from the spiritual triad, especially from the spiritual triad. And I think you can kind of see that if we go to this drawing. You see, into the petals come these triadal energies, which are ultimately, of course, monadic energies. So it's not, you know, what we work up from below and which comes in as our own experience into the atomic members of the atomic triangle and is harvested as quality in the egoic lotus. This contributes in a quite a specific way to the capacity of the egoic lotus, but it's not the only thing, is it? There's nourishment from above, where from the solar angel. There's a divine content also that is coming in and is making it even more possible for us to use what we have gathered from below. Well, finally, we seem to be getting there. So we will see how each initiation does most definitely mark a point of attainment, and therefore the entire subject of initiation takes on a new beauty and appears more worthy of the pain and struggle of attainment. It's not just a question of birthdays and rewards, you know. We have to earn our liberation. It's so Saturn leading to Uranus. I mean, Uranus is the father planet, the mystery planet, and although Saturn is old and venerable, Uranus is older still. Now, let me give you an indication, and no more than that, of what I mean. Initiation 1, let's just see how we're doing here. Initiation 1 is birth, the birth of the Christ within the heart. And it's so practical how he discusses this. Freedom from the control of the physical body and its appetites. Well, we expect much of this to be manifesting in the, let's see where we are here. Whoop, that's not it. No, this is it. To be manifesting the appetites of the physical body to the first petal and the second petal and even in a kind of mentalized way through the third petal. But particularly that which Lemuria conferred upon man, the sexual instinct, which DK tells us became rampant in later Lemuria and led to all kinds of abuses, the results of which we are struggling with today. This is the petal that is going to be mastered completely and its influences mastered by the time we are working in the seventh petal, which interestingly enough, if it's seven, it's connected with Uranus, the Uranian ray, and thus with the sacral center. And probably there's some kind of connection here related to the sacral center is the home of the mental elemental, because we have a definite knowledge influence here on the on this first petal of sacrifice and the use of knowledge in a sacrificial manner. But knowledge has to be earned, doesn't it? So if the sacral center is still doing its thing and is in any way rampant, the energy which should be rising into the higher centers and nourishing them and expanding them, the energy which should go to the pineal gland, in a sense ruled by Taurus, the giver of light, and Taurus, a major sign of sexuality, that center will not open. That pineal gland will not be stimulated. The physical, the etheric area around it will not be stimulated. So we have appetite is pretty much ruled by Mars. The whole outer tier of petals is Martian in a certain sense, just the way the middle tier is Venusian and the inner tier is Mercurian. And if I were to expand that idea, I would say that the outer tier is Martian-Saturnian. The inner tier of love is a Venusian-Neptunian. And the sacrificial tier is a Mercurian-Uranian. And of course, you know, Mercury and Uranus are so close, and so are Venus and Neptune, and so are Mars and Saturn. So very close. Very closely related, for very various different reasons, you know. Mercury eventually is synthesized into Uranus, Venus synthesized into Neptune, and Mars is synthesized into Saturn eventually, at the end of the ball game, Okay. Well, you know, all of these, it is a ball game, isn't it? Everything is a sphere. And it's the game of the relationship of all of these spheres on all these different levels. We all like to play ball in a way, you know. It's the symbol of movement and achievement. But the whole universe is kind of a ball game as well, a wheel game. So, appetite, Mars, is controlled, at least physical appetite, and the emphasis is particularly on the complete subduing of the petals and of the centers, where the emphasis is upon physical appetite. So we have, well, you know, we will definitely have the sacral center, definitely, and also the solar plexus, as it induces the hunger of the physical body, or is related to that. It is the center which rules the stomach and other related areas in the digestive system. Initiation 2, called the baptism, and it's all about purification. Baptism in the River Jordan. You kind of wonder what it is in the human energy system which represents the River Jordan. We have all these rivers, you know, Eridanus, and we have the Alpheus and Peneus. We have two rivers that are found when Hercules is cleansing the Augean stables. You begin to wonder about the flow of the Kundalini energy, whether this sort of serpentine movement can be considered river-like. Obviously, there are flows in the etheric body which are indicated. Freedom from the control of the emotional nature and the selfish sensitivity of the lower self. Well, okay, the emotional nature particularly is growing in power in the second petal, the Atlantean petal. So, of course, all that comes from there has to be subdued. But the selfish sensitivity part can be very much related to petal number 4, the Cancerian petal, always considered an emotional sign. And interestingly, Leo is the sign of, we are told, sensitivity. And there are definitely selfish phases to the Cancerian and Leonian experience before one begins to say, oh, there's something more than me. You know, the world doesn't revolve around me, and there is a higher self. And all that is discovered in the second tier of petals. But there's a lot of experience, I'm sure, in petal number 4, where we're integrating the personality, and petal number 5, where we are expressing our precious personality, where there is a problem with selfish sensitivity. So the second initiation obviously requires overcoming all of that. And even, you know, interestingly enough, it means that even the sixth petal will be completely unfolded. So it's a conquest. We might say, in a certain sense, that the first initiation is a conquest of the entire hall of ignorance and the petals of knowledge, and that the second initiation is an entire conquest of the petals of love for the astral plane, as they are called, and the hall of learning. You know, we have, by the end of that, spiritual intelligence and the illumined mind, we are told. Now, there's specific petals where physical instinct or emotional tendency comes in most strongly. Okay. But in general, the first tier of petals is the instinctual physical appetite group of petals, ruled by the earth signs, and the second tier of petals are ruled, at least from my way of thinking, by the emotional water signs. Okay, freedom from the control of the emotional nature. Doesn't mean one doesn't have an emotional nature. Doesn't mean one doesn't have sensitivity. One preserves the sensitivity without the selfishness. One preserves the emotional nature without it drowning the individual, the waves that rise upon the stormy seas of life, engulfing the swimmer and shutting out the sun and rendering all plans futile, as we have discussed for us in It's in these, page 45, the 15 Counsels of White Magic, 485 in that book. Then comes, you see, we're looking at the initiations from another angle. Transfiguration, and always love this one, freedom from the ancient authority of the threefold personality, marking a climaxing moment in the history of all initiates. So, climaxing because, you know, you're on the top of the mountain, in a sense. You've reached an important summit. And probationary initiates are found before this point. But the true initiate is of the third degree. The masters don't consider one an initiate until one has achieved the third degree, and then one has freedom from the ancient authority of that personality. And what's so interesting is you see people claim initiate status, third degree status, then it's so obvious that the personality has quite a bit of authority remaining. So the wish, it has become a wish fulfillment. One visualizes what might be possible, what looms on ahead, and one imagines one has achieved it without taking away the authority of the elemental life, with those things put into their proper place. Maybe not completely overcome until the fourth degree, but sufficiently overcome, as DK tells us, so that the individual is never hindered in his service by things arising from the personality. They may be there, they're acknowledged, they're let be, and one gets on with the service. So this means the opening of the ninth petal, the Sagittarian Arician petal, and one has a great vision. One understands what being is. One is able to set one's sights. It's really more. I have a friend. He calls himself a Sagicorn. He's an ideal Sagicorn. I think he's got about the last degree of Sag rising and Jupiter in Capricorn. He's a wonderful fellow, and he emphasizes or exemplifies those traits so beautifully. And when I look at petal number 9, I just feel it's a petal where the transition is from Sagittarius into Capricorn, because after all, by the time it is completely unfolded, you're into a pretty full unfoldment of the first synthesis petal, which I think can be attributed to Capricorn in terms of the synthesis of knowledge. And it's almost as if Sagittarius is striving forward toward the unfoldment of this petal, and when it's achieved, we're into the Capricorn qualities. We have reached the top of the mountain, and Sagittarius is always about, so to speak, getting there. And the light shines forth, a great vision of light under Sagittarius, and a great exemplification of mountaintop light under Capricorn. So the ending of the ancient authority of the threefold personality, you know, you conquer the three-headed dog in hell, Cerberus, Caribus, and that's in the Capricorn labor, and you conquer the three tiers of heads of the Hydra, who are liable to return in a very threatening manner, all of them. You know, you've laid the physical appetites to rest, reasonably so. You've laid the emotional tendencies to rest, reasonably so. And then they all come back, all nine heads of the Hydras in all three tiers, challenging you at the last minute at the gate of the third initiation. So it is, as Master DK says, a fearful conflict, because one has to relinquish all that is familiar, detach oneself from all that one has thought to have been, and embark, Sagittarius in a way, on an entirely new a phase of unfoldment, and in a way enter what is unfamiliar or has for a long time been unfamiliar, marking a climaxing moment in the history of all initiates. So the great light shines forth, the supernal light, or at least a modification or an attenuation of supernal light, shines forth from the mountain top, And one goes beyond figure and form. This one is transfigured. One goes into the world of real form rather than of the dense form, which is simply an effect of the cosmic etheric archetypes around which the matter of the previous solar system is gathered. Okay, and so, you know, when you're looking in the egoic lotus, all the nine petals are unfolded here, and the first synthesis petal, it really is majorly unfolded. The third synthesis petal has opened. It's the petal connected with spirit. And there's going to be so much work done in that Capricorn, Aquarius, Pisces area of the synthesis petals following the third initiation. But maybe they won't burst open until just before the fourth initiation, to which we come. Initiation for renunciation. Crucifixion, renunciation, depends on the perspective. More crucifixion in the West, renunciation in the East. And this, well, you know, it's just marvelous. Freedom from all self-interest. That is, we don't look at life as a personality anymore and how to enhance the well-being of the personality and its satisfactions. It's simply an instrument, that's it. And renouncing of the personal life in the interest of the larger whole. And we do begin to see that the third degree initiate, while 75% there, hasn't really fully done that yet. Let's just say the renunciation of the authority, ancient authority of the threefold self, is achieved. In other words, he cannot be swayed from his service by the antics of the threefold personality, but the all personal interest and so forth is only achieved at initiation number four. Even soul consciousness ceases to be important, and a more universal awareness and one closer to the divine mind takes its place. Well, you kind of wonder whether the divine mind is not found on the third and atmic level. I mean, it's certainly found on the cosmic planes as well, but number three is so connected with mind, and its reflection on the cosmic physical plane is the atmic plane, which is not only a plane of will, but a plane of mind, just like the monadic plane is a plane of love and the logoic plane is a plane of will. So when he says ceases to be importance and a more universal awareness and one closer to the divine mind, you begin to think of the Buddhic plane takes its place. And that's the area into which the renunciation liberates the person, onto the Buddhic plane, and he is now free from containment in the dense physical vehicle of the solar logos. So that's quite a test, isn't it? Because self-interest can be so very, very subtle and can masquerade, and you can have all these wonderful motives, just the way the rich young man had. He had so many wonderful motives, so many gifts he wanted to. But, you know, there was a, in his intention to give what he had, there was still a subtle form of self-love. You know, he wanted to keep his treasury, not trusting that the treasury would be augmented manyfold if he would only relinquish it. Namely, sell all you have, okay, which means basically to allow it to, well, to use it for no self-interest whatsoever, and to allow it to begin to dematerialize into some more ethereal, cosmic etheric form, and sell all you have and give the money to the poor. Basically, to empty the bowl completely and without any reservation, to take every possible gift you have and without the slightest eye upon the personal self, to offer it in the interest of the divine plan. I had another explanation of that a few programs ago, and I think it was a little better. I don't know where it is, but maybe you'll find it along your way. So, sell all you have and give the money to the poor, and then follow me right into the spiritual triad. Now, of course, in selling all that he has, he will still retain it, but it won't be recognizable in the form that he had those qualities before. He will have the essence of the qualities, always be able to use those things, but he will not be connected with the specifics of those qualities and how he attained them and the experiences which led to them, and his whole personal, transpersonal history. All that will be gone. So, you know, that renunciation would mean the kind of lotus we're looking at right here. It's a full-blown lotus. It is the ideal for all of us to reach this full unfoldment. The center is white, you know, but DK says these petals are of a beautiful lemon yellow hue, and probably they are not even, probably they have color too, you know, of some kind, striations and all that, since they are so synthetic. In an interesting way, just the way the personality elemental synthesizes the lower three elementals, and it's the number four, and maybe Cancer synthesizes the first three signs, we can say that in these petals of synthesis, this color yellow synthesizes all the foregoing colors and somehow contains them. It is the harmonious harvest of all of them. And it shows the relationship of the synthesis petals to the Buddhic plane. Particularly, DK tells us it was a downflow of energy from the Buddhic plane which originally produced them. As far as what's here in the middle on this egoic lotus, you know, the idea of 24 and 8, well, are these absolutely accurate? I cannot say, but they certainly are very evocative of thought. 24, the number of Shambhala, 8, the number of Sirius, and there we have the two crosses, the Cardinal Cross and the St. Andrew Cross, superimposed, which has a lot to do with how the higher energy of the will is operating within the head. Well, okay, let's see where we are, friends. I guess, yeah, we're just about there. It's good. I can make an hour and a half program out of this. I always like to round things off. I mean, I would love to go on, you know, with Initiation 5 and all that. And we can say, you know, the consuming of the debris of the causal body to a certain extent, and the clarification of anything that is not yet clarified, so there can be a great divine revelation. Here, let me just do that here. But, you know, lead me not into temptation. I'm going to try to avoid that temptation. it's really hard to avoid, you know. But, okay, the more I contemplate it, the more I don't want to avoid it. I will come back to this. I will come back to this. And in doing so, fortunately, it's fairly early in the split of the book, in Initiation Human and Solar, page 340. So if we look at Initiation Human and Solar, I'm wrong, the rays and the initiations, if we look at that, and let's just say let's go to page 300, and we find that we're still in the 14th rule. So if we were to go on here we go, an esoteric catechism, yes, it could begin there, right around page 300. So page 340 would be fairly early in the book. So in my plans, I probably will get there, okay, and I'd like to fulfill my plans, you know. There's an old German saying, man tracht und Gott lacht. It basically means that man plans and God laughs. But let's see how it goes. All right, there's so much to discuss there. So we'll make this program an hour and a half, and we'll say that this is now the end of Egoic Lotus Commentary, of Egoic Lotus Webinar Commentary, Program 18. And basically, we've looked at page 340, RI 340, and 685 or so. I think that would be about 686, 685 to 686. And that should be sufficient. And then we'll go on somewhere, but not here, tempting as it is, of Egoic Lotus Webinar Commentary, Program 19, somewhere. We're preparing the way for going petal by petal for the true synthesis of the understanding of the egoic lotus. You know, when I look at Master DK's work, I find it's scattered. His knowledge is scattered throughout the books, making us work. We have to earn our synthesis. You know, he basically says, earn the synthesis of knowledge. Earn your 10th petal, or even your, say, your first synthesis petal, or your 7th petal, your first sacrifice petal. You have to earn it. You have to make your way laboriously through. You have to locate, fix your sight in a Saturnian manner on every piece of knowledge. Then you have to focus the magnifying glass of fifth ray Venus upon it so as to be utterly clear about what it is. Then you have to use Mercury to connect all of those clarified nuggets of knowledge. And then you have to Jupiterize the whole intersecting network of related knowledge until it stands forth as an articulated whole. Then sacrifice it all under Neptune, you know, and dematerialize it all, etherealize it all, so it is essential wisdom and can be drawn upon at any time and translated into any concrete form of knowledge upon demand. All right, well, that will be it for the moment. And we'll see you for program 19.